Here's the dirty little secret about New Zealand. We Australians might like to make fun of our cousins across the ditch. We might like to crack bad jokes about sheep. We might make fun of their accents. We might treat Kiwis like the weird relatives you're sometimes forced to hang out with at family get-togethers. But the dirty little secret is this. We're jealous. Because pretty much every Australian would have to admit that New Zealand is amazing. As a tourist destination, it's one of the finest on the planet. A place of almost unfair natural beauty, of overwhelmingly kind-hearted, friendly people. A place where the food is good and the wine is better. Where you can jump out of a plane or relax in a hot spring, comfortable in the knowledge that everything is going to be okay. New Zealand is the greatest, and today we're going to celebrate it. Hi, I'm Ben Groundwater, and you're listening to Flight of Fancy, the traveller.com.au podcast. Today, we're skipping across the ditch to Aotearoa, to the land of the long white cloud, to Middle Earth, to discover everything that's fun and beautiful in this wonderful land. We're going to cover the full gamut of tourism experiences on offer in NZ, from hardcore adventure to the lap of luxury, from big cities to small country towns. And we're going to do this with the help of two seasoned travellers who have a deep appreciation for Kiwiland. First up, she's a long-time collaborator on Flight of Fancy, a writer for traveller.com.au who has visited New Zealand, I'm sure, more times than she can count, Uta Juncker.
Hi, Ben.
Hi, Uta. Great to have you with us. Also with us, she's the former general manager of travel at Fairfax, turned head of content at Storyation, and, as you're about to discover, a real-life Kiwi, Lauren Quaintance.
Hi, Ben.
Hi, Lauren. Thanks for coming along.
Welcome.
Now, can you explain to us in 20 words or less what's so great about New Zealand?
In 20 words or less, that's a challenge.
It's a challenge.
New Zealanders like to talk. We all like to talk a lot. I guess, you know, what's great about New Zealand is it's really a sort of unaffected sort of place. You know,
yeah.
It's the people. It's people. Well, it's got great landscapes, sure, but there are landscapes, you know, fantastic landscapes all around the world.
Yeah.
This is the people. They are genuinely friendly. Is that 20 words?
Yeah, I think somewhere like that. Uta, what do you think it is? Do they just do tourism right over there?
Oh, it's what is not to love about this destination? It's a short flight. The exchange rate is decent.
Mm-hmm.
People speak the same language, sort of, and drive on the same side of the road. And they, I mean, Lauren's right. It's the friendliness. You've got spectacular scenery. You've got all these great things to see and do. But it's the fact that you stop for petrol in a little town in New Zealand. And, I mean, I like to have a chat. But, oh, my word, in New Zealand, you better have a packed lunch if you make a petrol stop because they're not going to let you go. And they just want to know about you and they just want to find out what you've seen and give you some tips and tell you that their Auntie May makes a great venison pie down the road. And, I mean, it's adorable.
They're genuinely thrilled that you are there. That's why. Mm. They want to show you their country. They're very, very proud of their country. And it's something to do with being, you know, born in a place that is literally the ends of the earth. You know, you can't believe that people come all this way and they get to see this fantastic place and you want to share it with them.
Yeah. Do you think Australians are surprised when they get to New Zealand how different it is over there? Because I feel like our cultures are fairly similar, but you get there and it just seems completely different.
I think they are surprised because I think, you know, there's that whole thing, is New Zealand just another state of Australia? You know, and at various times there's been talk about, you know, kind of, you know, why bother New Zealand? You may as well just, you know, become, you know, part of the Federation. But it actually is really a very different place. I mean, it's a long, skinny place for a start. It's not this big sort of continent, you know, where the weather's stable. The weather is not stable. The weather blows in and blows out. You know, there's a reason for that Crowded House song of, you know, four seasons in one day.
That is
true.
Take the weather with you as well.
But that makes for kind of this amazing landscape that's very different, very green.
They're
not Australian. None of these people that you claim are Australian. You can take Russell Crowe.
That's who you guys get, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. And so, you know, that weather does make a difference. It does mean that, you know, it's greener, it's a sort of lush landscapes, you know, and it's a long, skinny place with kind of winding roads. That in itself is different. But I think it's just a sort of, it's more of a mental thing about being, feeling that you are on the end of the earth and that has shaped the culture in a way. It has made people feel different and feel that they are on the edge and they've got something to prove.
I'm always amused by the sort of Scottish heritage of people in Dunedin in the far south. Because I look around there and I think to myself, gee, you guys really went out on a limb, didn't you? moving from freezing cold hilly Scotland to freezing cold hilly Dunedin.
What were you thinking?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they wanted to feel at home, I guess.
Yeah, that's
you
right.
You would feel at home there.
The random fact that really helped me understand New Zealanders, because Lauren, you're sitting there and you're going, oh, New Zealand, it's the end of the earth. And I mean, in Australia, we grew up feeling Australia was the end of the earth too. But New Zealand, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you didn't get TV till the 1970s.
Yeah, I think it might have been the late 60s, but there is a sort of a culture of isolation that's quite different to Australia,
right,
you know.
Okay.
And I think
it's more extreme than our experience.
I think Australians, I've always thought, are very outward-looking, you know, and they're kind of very positive people. And I moved here when I was 14. And so I could see those differences. They're very outward-looking. They look to the US. They look to be part of the world. New Zealanders are quite introspective, you know, and they take things quite seriously, hence, you know, the rugby losses, you know, when the economy actually dips, you know, it's like a statistical fact.
Unfortunately, they haven't had to worry about that for about 10 years
it's
now.
It's quite some time, especially playing Australia. But, you know, it's a very introspective nature, and I sort of think they're a bit more like Melbourne. I don't know. They kind of wear more black, and, you know, they're kind of, you know, read a lot of poetry and quite introspective people and quite thoughtful people.
But they're also really practical too. Like, New Zealanders are one of those people, like, if you had to do something that would be totally beyond you, like building a house or something, I'd go to a Finn, but if a Finn weren't around, I'd go to a New Zealander and I'd go, what do you reckon? And they'd sit there and go, right, well, let's look at this logically, you know, and then they go, and I helped my uncle build a shed once, and I'm sure we can,
I think there are two cultural touchstones that are really famously from New Zealand now, and to me that really encapsulate what New Zealand is. One of them is Lord of the Rings. The other one is Flight of the Conchords. To me, it's this really beautiful place filled with slightly quirky, weird, funny people. I think that
sums it up. And I think, but then the third might be that sort of element of that can-do element that Ute is talking about, which, you know, we have this thing called number eight wire, which is, you know, a fencing wire. People will talk about having a number eight mentality, which is you can do anything if you've got fencing wire, which is kind of like a, you know, sheep farmer meets MacGyver kind of thing, you know. And so there's that as well. But I think you're right about the humour. And I love seeing the humour kind of be elevated to the world stage in the last few years. I think that humour has always been there, that kind
it's
of
very
quirky,
dry,
very dry sense of humour. You know, the Flight of Conchords is a great example. You know, Taika Waititi is another. And I think that, you know, you've got this kind of funny, but, you know, and then quite introspective and quite can-do, innovative culture. There's some interesting elements combining there to make it.
One of the things that shocked me when I got to New Zealand was to realise that we as Australians kind of play this older brother role, and in the same way as the US does for Canada, where we're kind of the loud, crass, embarrassing ones. And
we're the Yanks of the South Pacific.
Like,
it's horrifying.
No, this is really, it's not a good way to look at yourself, but that's kind of what we are.
Yeah, it's funny. And I find myself in New Zealand, I have to make a conscious effort to talk a bit slower, you know, and not to be the Gabby in a rush Australian and got to do this. And it's like, breathe deep. Chill out.
Yeah, fight the cliche.
I do like Kiwis calling Australia the West Island. I enjoyed that.
Yes.
Kind of like, oh, you're over from the West Island, are you?
Yeah, this is sort of, you know, I mean, look, at its worst, it's sort of a slight chip on the shoulder thing, but, you know, at its best, it's just a sort of sibling rivalry, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. Another part of the New Zealand psyche is also this sort of need to throw yourself off things that are really high and dangerous, and or just do things that are adventurous.
Yeah.
What's with that?
That's baked into the culture again. And I think it does come back to this sort of sense of innovation and we can do anything. And I think that coming up with the whole idea of bungee jumping sort of came out from that, you know. And, you know, there's a bridge. Well, we could jump off that.
If you've got some number eight wire.
Yeah, that's right.
Number eight
mentality. It's a Edmund Hillary sort of thing of, you know, you know, when he was asked why they climbed Mount Everest, because it was there, you know. And that's so it's sort of that's very much in the culture, kind of, you know, how can we innovate? But adventure and pushing yourself to the edge, that's part of it. It's sort of driven from this sort of sense of, you know, slightly unsettled, you know, you're not sort of lying back thinking, oh, it's fine, you know, we're in the centre of the world, you know, we've got to kind of keep pushing ourselves and kind of keep proving ourselves.
Yeah. I just kind of find that any activity that ends with ing, like a doing, a thing that you do, you can do it in New Zealand. You know, mountain biking, kayaking, whitewater rafting, hiking, you know, cycling, all of these things New Zealand is a great place to do all of that.
Well, there's a new slogan for New Zealand tourism is, you know, it's the land of ing. No need for any marketing genius, just, you know, we can come up with it right
here. 100% pure New Zealand.
Land of ing.
I feel like what they really need is an Australian to Australian-splain it for them. They'll really appreciate that.
They'll love that.
Now, I asked you guys beforehand, if anything had ever gone wrong in your travels in New Zealand. And Uta, you just gave me a flat out no.
Well, I gave you a flat out no. But then when I heard all these cyclone stories, I thought, oh yeah, I got stranded at the airport and nearly didn't get back to Australia for 2 days. Yeah. Right.
So the weather is going to be the major drama, I think, for travellers in New Zealand, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Lauren, you've got a few things have happened to you there as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, mainly cyclones. Yeah. Cyclones are quite big and they, I don't know, I'm imagining it. They seem to be more frequent, but every time I go now, there's a cyclone. I mean, probably the last two trips I've had a cyclone. One was last year to Waiheke Island. Couldn't get across to the island. The ferries were threatened to be cancelled. We did get there, then the power went out. So we spent, sort of a day with candles and, you know, number eight wide, everything in the freezer, you know, probably MacGyvering a few sort of, you know, things. And then on the most recent trip, I did a big road trip just a few months ago. And again, the Napier Taupo Road, which kind of is a main artery to get to the east coast from the centre of the North Island, was sort of a washout and was closed. And we were facing this huge drive, you know, of about, it was going to be like 9 hours to go around the other way via Palmerston North with my two children in the back, which I was not looking forward to. And then just at the last moment, the road opened. It was, you know, so it does happen. And I think there's a sense that they're quite frequent, and New Zealanders are a bit blasé about it because quite often these cyclones don't actually hit. You know, there's kind of a cyclone warning.
Right, okay.
And then it misses New Zealand because, as I said before, it's not this big kind of landmass weather. You've got this constant weather and you can predict it.
Yeah.
You know, it really does sometimes just not happen at all. And people are a bit like, yeah, well, you know, is it really coming?
I was snowed in Lake Tekapo, which is a high lake down near Queenstown, for about 3 days or so. It was just at the start of winter. I was trying to get down to Christchurch to fly out, and that night it just snowed and it snowed and it snowed. And by the time I got up, it was chest deep snow, and all the roads were closed, and the TV was out, all communications were out. There was just nothing to do. I was there by myself as well, so it was kind of boring. So basically, I just had to go outside and make snow angels and take photos of it so that I knew it was there. And then wade through this amazingly deep snow to get to the corner shop, which was still open, so I could buy some pasta. And in that sort of classically laconic way, I just got, you know, fought my way into this corner store and opened the door. And there's a guy behind the till, and he's like, oh, hey, mate, how are you? How do you think I am? Like, I'm stuck here. I just had to get here through chest deep snow. Yeah, no problem. That's the way it is.
It's kind of magnificent, isn't it? I mean, I sort of love the idea of, I mean, I quite like the drama of the weather intervening sometimes, and, you know, the whole idea that your holiday might need to be extended has happened to you too. No, that's exciting, isn't it? You know,
it is. It's good. I would have preferred to not be there by myself.
I'm German. I like things to go as planned. I mean, actually, here we go. This is a thing that did not work for me in New Zealand. One time, we drove not that long way, but let's pretend it was a long way. Oh, so New Zealand ain't what it used to be.
Crimea River. Sounds terrible.
Can anyone explain Fergburger to me? Fergburger is a burger joint in Queenstown, and it is super popular. There are lines almost 24 hours a day out there.
Yeah,
I've been, it's not that great.
No, it's drunk skiers. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. They turn things into things.
Have you been there, Lauren?
Yeah, no, I've actually never eaten a Fergburger, although I was in Queenstown a couple of months ago. I've been there twice in the last few months, and each time there's been a huge queue down the street. I'm not a huge burger person. That probably wouldn't be my first trip, but I am kind of fascinated by it. I think it's just cold, isn't it? And a burger feels like the right thing to eat. I think that must be it.
So.
I don't know, because I can't see that it's particularly special. There's gourmet burger places all over New Zealand.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit puzzled by Fergburger.
I tell you what I would queue for, though. This is one of New Zealand's secret weapons, and I'm about to blow up for everyone.
I wonder if it's going to be the same as mine, but I've got one. So you go, you do yours.
Mine involves chocolate.
Oh, mine does not.
Shock chocolates in Wellington and in Greytown. Mm-hmm. Handmade chocolates using Belgian chocolate that I think you'd be hard put to find chocolates quite as good in Australia.
Really?
Excellent chocolates. So about that one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, mine is a cheese roll. Only available in certain areas of Southland. They have them in Dunedin. They have them in Invercargill. If you go as far north.
You've been to Invercargill too.
I have, yeah.
Why?
Look, I asked myself the same question when I was there. But a cheese roll is invented by students for students. It's extremely cheap and easy. It's basically a slice of bread and you get grated cheese and French onion soup mix and I think maybe a little bit of mustard and something else to kind of loosen it, and you stir all that together. Maybe it's even sour cream, something like that, cream cheese.
You spread it
on the piece of bread, you roll it up, and you stick a toothpick in it to keep it in a roll, and then you put it under the grill. And you grill it, and then you
And then
eat.
What do you do with it?
You eat it. It's so good. Lauren, have you had one before?
I look, no, but I had written about this, had journalists write about this, and sent a food writer from Auckland to Dunedin to kind of find the best cheese rolls.
Because it's so localised, isn't it? Anywhere else in New Zealand, they don't even know about them.
Yeah, and so I think it's sort of this puzzling mix of the Scottish heritage, you know, and they're probably not well known for having the greatest taste in food, I don't think. Yeah. Say that cautiously. Yeah. And then the university. It's a university town. Dunedin is, you know, predominantly...
Oh, it's got drunk student written all over it.
Yeah, and I went to university there, and, it is very much run by the students, and it was a lot of stodgy food, and, you know, people drink beer out of their boots and all of that sort of thing. You know, it's very much...
Dunedin is a great city. I really enjoy it. There's a great big student population there. They have a ritual of burning their couches at the end of the university year, don't they?
Yes.
And there's a car race up a really steep hill.
Yes, well, the world's steepest street is in Dunedin. So it's a fun place. And I think, so I can only explain the cheese roll as being a collision of those two sort of cultural elements of, you know, sort of student culture meets Scottish food culture.
The look on Uta's face is just incredible.
Yeah, I have just crossed Dunedin off my list of places to go because I'm hearing cheese rolls, drinking beer from boots, and burning couches.
There's a lot more to Dunedin, of course. There is. There's some sort of beautiful Gothic architecture there. There's also some, there's great wildlife near Dunedin. So there are a lot of reasons to go to Dunedin other than the, being the cheese rolls. But it's interesting that it has packet soup in it because this is sort of a thing in New Zealand. I don't know if you've ever had, chips served to you with crisps. Served to you with a beer, perhaps by someone in New Zealand, they'll often serve up a dip that's made out of packet soup.
Right.
It's like packet soup and sour cream. Like it's a thing.
You know, we did that in the 70s and then we outgrew it.
It's all happening in New Zealand. Yes, that's it. Yes. So, inventive uses of packet soup mix.
There you go. Visit New Zealand with Intrepid Travel and learn why the land of the long white cloud is one of Mother Nature's true triumphs. With 7 distinct small group tours to choose from, Intrepid Travel will show you an organic blend of contemporary culture and tribal tradition, wondrous wineries, cultured cities, and phenomenal peaks. Inspire your spirit and stir your soul at intrepidtravel.com/New Zealand today. All right, I'm here with Lauren Quaintance and Uta Juncker. We're talking about one of our favourite countries, New Zealand. Guys, cheese rolls aside, there's also some other great food and wine in New Zealand, right? Lauren, you travel basically just for food and wine there these days.
Yeah, well, I mean, I do a lot of both, but food and wine's almost always involved. I do a lot of luxury travel in New Zealand, so, you know, food and wine's a big part of that.
And there's more to it than Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc.
I loathe Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc. I'm sorry. It's not something I'd say in New Zealand. It's not a great
But there's some great wine that's not Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah, I like to call it cat's pee on a gooseberry bush, you know. Not all Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc, but just Sauvignon Blanc in general. I'm not a big fan. I'm more of a Chardonnay, Pinot Noir sort of fan.
Yeah.
And New Zealand's doing some great Pinot Noir and Central Otago, of course.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of style is fantastic where you've got this, you know, all this sort of soil that in the past nobody wanted to use for anything. It's the bad soil. You know, is now producing these great wines. Same in Hawke's Bay in an area called Gimblet Gravels, which is, you know, producing some fantastic wine as well.
Yeah. I went to a couple of wineries up there, actually, and they're growing Shiraz grapes, but they're calling it Syrah, which is generally a thing that winemakers do if it's not a big, heavy red, if it's a different sort of style of that. And so, like, probably literally 3 or 4 different people, as I was trying these Syrahs, said to me, they're a little bit like an Australian Shiraz, but they're probably a bit more elegant than that.
Probably how they summarise, the difference between Australians and New Zealanders. I think, you know, Central Otago is a great place for food and wine, which is sort of, you know, Queenstown is in Central Otago, so you're right in the middle of those vineyards.
Yep.
And you mentioned Invercargill. Why would you go to Invercargill? Well, your proximity to Bluff and the Bluff oysters is a good reason.
Let's talk about Bluff oysters, because I had them and I don't get it.
Yeah, I can't say. I mean, you're used to these kind of skinny, kind of, you know, Pacific style of oysters, a Bluff oysters are really fat and juicy, and you just have to kind of swallow them in one gulp.
Right.
But, you know, some people more used to...
It's very seasonal, isn't it? There's only maybe a couple of months of the year that you can get them?
Yes, well, the season's got a little bit longer in recent years, but there were some years where we didn't get them at all because they needed the beds to recover. You know, they're hugely popular.
Yeah.
But it's a very different sort of taste.
It is. And you find every pub is doing them. fried or fresh or, yeah.
Particularly at that part of the island. I mean, in Auckland more, it's you know, you're getting them at the posh restaurants and, you know, they'll shuck them for you. They'll bring someone in on the opening season day kind of shuck them in front of you and then you can have them different ways. But yeah, if you get down to the deep south, as we call the sort of area around Invercargill and Bluff, it is very much, they're everywhere. And you can buy huge punnets with like 150 oysters in them.
Wow.
Fantastic.
And the other thing I've had a lot of on the South Island, and maybe this was just me, whitebait fritters.
Yes,
they're
good.
Which is usually not my favourite thing, but gee, the Kiwi ones are good.
Yeah.
Really tasty. I don't know whether you have better quality whitebait or what's going on.
Yeah, well, particularly on the west coast of the South Island, that's your kind of real place for whitebait. And, you know, Janet Frame, you might know, is a sort of famous New Zealand author who would often write about whitebaiting in a lot of her work and her literature. And it's kind of this sort of, you know, wild, empty place. And, you know, it's a fantastic place, the west coast, but it's very unpopulated and then sort of rough, the sea. And that's where you'll often get whitebait. And a whitebait there, I think it's very delicate, so it can be ruined. It depends how sort of over battered people make it. So sometimes you'll get a whitebait fritter and there's just too much flour and you know, stuff. You know, you've just got to do it.
There's an oyster in there somewhere.
Yeah. It's got to be barely hanging together. You know, the whitebait, the little tiny fishes, they're very, very delicate.
Yeah. Uta, I guess New Zealand is probably known through a lot of Australians as a sort of action adventure kind of place. You know, you go there to go skiing, you go there to go cycling. But there's also
other people do.
Other people do, yeah. But there's also some pretty amazing luxury stuff over there, isn't there? You've stayed at one of the most famous.
Hooker Lodge.
Yeah.
So that's Queen Elizabeth's favourite, and that's the oldest one.
Of course it is.
And, you know, it's got like...
Where is it?
It's North Island. Mm-hmm. Excellent trout fishing.
Yeah.
I also met the world's happiest duck on Lake Taupo.
Did you?
We were on a little boat. And it was riding the wake, and then it would fly to the front of the boat and walk the whole length of the boat and hop back in and ride the wake again. And I thought that was very New Zealand. Anyway, Hooker Lodge.
Yep.
Tartan blankets everywhere, very sort of Scottish hunting lodge feel. But, I mean, it's beautiful, but all these lodges, New Zealand, what you've got to give them, they sort of invented the Southern Hemisphere luxury lodge. Yep. They've got it nailed. And you can have them in all these different manifestations. There's one, Matakauri, outside Queenstown, which is very sleek and modern and just equally great. And then there's one in Wanaka, which is not too far from Queenstown and is sort of where the locals go instead, which is, again, stunningly beautiful and home of the famous hashtag Wanaka tree. And that belonged to the Meyer family, and that's got more of a family feel, and you all sit at a long table for breakfast. And anyway, all these crazy, beautiful lodges are located
stuck out in the middle of nowhere.
Middle of nowhere, wilderness areas, amazing food and wine, hot and cold running, everything, lots of massages. And, you know, if you're feeling a little bit bad, you can go for a walk or do something active, but really just lock yourself up in there. And they're totally indulgent, and they just do them so well.
I think Lauren and I both stayed at one which is truly incredible called Minaret Station near Wanaka.
Oh, where you go up in the chopper.
The only way to get there is by helicopter, isn't there? It's an old sheep station, is it?
Yeah, that's right. So it's owned by one of the kind of New Zealand sort of aviation pioneers, his son. So there's an aviation pioneer called Sir Tim Wallace, and he sort of well-known in New Zealand for kind of flying Spitfire planes. And anyway, his sons, they have this business, which is partly the lodge, but it's partly also a helicopter business. And a sort of, you know, I think, you know, kind of animal recovery, you know, sort of farming-esque. I'm getting out of my comfort zone talking about farming, but, you know, they deer recovery type thing. So there's sort of different elements of this helicopter business, but the lodge is part of it. And I think there's only four rooms there.
Yeah. Really popular with Hollywood types because there's absolutely no paparazzi up there because there is nothing up there.
Yeah. And there's no way to get in except, and I was there in December and they said, you know, we could have put a road in here probably by now, but we choose not to. And so that's what's so amazing. I mean, I remember flying in there and it's kind of like this sharp intake of breath as you're going to come up this valley, this long glacial valley, and you can see the four rooms and then the main lodge building in the distance. And it's really, really breathtaking. But why I love Minaret Station so much, and I've stayed at a lot of most of the luxury lodges in New Zealand, what I love about Minaret Station is it really represents a sort of New Zealand style of luxury, which is sort of, it's sort of anti-gold taps and, you know, super three-count sheets. It's not that. I mean, those things, you know, there is a standard of luxury, obviously, but it's not about the things and you know, being sort of pampered in that sort of way. It's really about these incredible places, getting access to these incredible places that you couldn't otherwise access, and the people that take you there. I mean, mean, these brothers and Tim Wallace, sons, who Matt is now running the lodge, they're just the most amazing down-to-earth New Zealanders. You know, they're the kind of guys who are using the number eight wire to do anything. They're kind of salt of the earth, and they will take you to these places that they've grown up skiing these mountains, they've grown up hunting here. Their father used to drop them off in a helicopter when they were like 8 and 10, these boys.
I mean, mine too.
Yeah, same. Drop them off for the day and say, just go hunting over there, you know, like with, you know, that, and that's how they grew up in this place. So you get this kind of access to this incredible experience. I remember one particular day, actually, one of the things they do is they will fly you to the West Coast that we were just talking about, and either you can go white baking, or Matt, who was flying the helicopter, jumps out, pulls on a wetsuit, dives in the water, pulls out this enormous crayfish. You jump back in the helicopter, he flies you to either a side of a glacier or an old shearer's hut in the mountains, and he cooks it for you, you know, and then pulls out of his picnic basket, or, you know, kind of these beautiful Central Otago wines. I mean, it's pretty special.
Yeah, see, Lauren, I want your perspective on this, because I'm a little bit suspicious about the number of well-placed shearer's huts on New Zealand mountaintops, because there seem to be a lot of them. Like, every time you go to a luxury lodge, you have the day trip on the helicopter and you go out, and there's, you know, this soaring mountain that's snow-capped, and then there'll be a stunning alpine lake or a frozen-looking river or something, and there's a shearer's hut right there. It's like, really?
Yeah. Well, I understand, but and maybe they're not used by shearers so much anymore, but these huts, particularly at Minaret Station, are genuinely used. I was with someone on that day who had been hiking in the mountain, and locals can say, can we stay in the shearer's hut on the way through? So they will. And this guy had stayed there a few months previously. He'd been hiking with his 12-year-old son through the mountains, and he calls up Minaret Station and says, can I stay in that hut? And he will stay on the way. So they're still used. You know, they're not just there for, you know, kind of tourist purposes, you know.
And New Zealand is extremely good at those hikers' huts as well. There's a lot of multi-day hikes that you can do in New Zealand, you know, down in Milford Sound, but also sort of throughout the country. And a lot of them have these hikers' huts that you can book a night in and spend the night. There's not really any facilities. They're just sort of shelters. But they're really great facilities for hikers who want to do those multi-day things.
That's right. And I think it's back to that whole point that New Zealanders actually are out doing this stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's not sort of put on. It's not fake. They are, you know, extremely adventurous. They love to hike. They love to go mountain biking in the actual mountains, you know, not along, you know, a city street. Yeah. You know, that's what they're doing. And so...
There's a thing called the NZ Great Cycle Trail, which is a network of, I think, about 24 cycle trails now. Some of them are single day. Some of them are multi-day. Some of them are up to about 7 days, I think, that they'll take you. But they're all sort of well mapped out, and all of them have accommodation along the way. And they're all really, you know, a lot of thought has gone into them and a lot of work has gone into them to make them, you know, very easy for tourists who've never been there before to be able to access these places.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Let's just quickly talk about a few of our other favourite places in New Zealand. We were talking about Wanaka. You can stay at Minaret Station if you have thousands and thousands of dollars to spend a night, but it's also... It's a really great alternative to Queenstown, isn't it? It's a small sort of mountain town right by a lake. It has a lot of the things that Queenstown has, but maybe without quite as many tourists.
Yeah, I think that I've always described Wanaka as, and I think Wanaka's got more and more popular over the last few years, you know, with tourists from overseas. But in the past, it was always the kind of locals, Queenstown. You know, we would never go on family holidays to Queenstown. I mean, we wouldn't dream of that. Like, that we're not going out on the luge or, you know, kind of, you know, shot over jet, all those kinds of things. It's not really what New Zealanders do, but they still want to access the mountains, they want to access the lake and have that same kind of experience. So we have, holiday in Wanaka on an annual basis. We take my kids skiing there, and they get to access all that fantastic, you know, kind of open landscapes and skiing. There's a couple of different fields, you know, within an easy drive of Wanaka. So if you're into skiing, it's a great place to go, particularly the one which we call Terrible Cone, which is
Treble Cone. Better than Concrete Peak.
Yeah, it's the kind of place. I mean, I love it. I took my kids there last year, and the cousins and the aunts and uncles are all like, if you can learn to ski at Treble Cone or Terrible Cone, you can ski anywhere, you know. So there's basically there's not really a lot of sort of learner slopes there. It's just, you know, you kind of just throw them down the mountain, and that's the kind of New Zealand way, you know. Throw them down the mountain, and if they're skiing at the bottom, you keep them. If they're not, you know, move on.
There's a whole bunch of great club ski fields in New Zealand, which I think a lot of people don't know. They know all the sort of big name ones, but I went to one called Ohau on the South Island, which is, I mean, it's club field. It's owned by a club, and there's basically one chairlift there. And it's really small and really friendly and fun. And there's only one place to stay, and everyone gets together and has dinner together at the end of the day. And there's another one that you've, Porter Heights, is it called?
That's right. Porter Heights is outside of Christchurch, not far out of Christchurch.
Yeah.
And we've skied there quite regularly as well because we've got family in Christchurch. And what I love about these kind of fields, as you say, they're sort of so intimate, and you know, don't go expecting, you know, huge facilities and multiple chairlifts and all that sort of thing. But there's often a cafe, or the New Zealanders won't be using it because they will have towed their barbecue up behind their four-wheel drive, you know, and set up in the car park with the barbecue and, you know, chili bins, Eskies, as the Australians like to call them, with their beers in there for lunchtime. They'll go down there to the car park at lunchtime because you couldn't possibly spend money in the cafe because that would be, you know, it must be extortionately expensive, you know. So I love that. And that's that great sort of, you know, community atmosphere of it, which, you know, you get a real, very authentic New Zealand experience, I think, in those clubs fields.
Absolutely. Uta, you really like some of the smaller towns in New Zealand, don't you?
New Zealand, to me, is all about small towns. It's about driving along a road, which will be most of the time a lot narrower than you think it's going to be. And then you just stop in a little place and get out and walk down the street and someone will talk to you. And then you stop and you have a chat, and then they send you to a nice little cafe and you eat white bait fritters and drink excellent wine, and someone else talks to you, and then, you know, next thing you know, it's 4 in the afternoon and your day is gone. And there's some sort of destination small towns like Arrowtown and Greytown, but I just reckon stop in any small town.
My tip on small towns is Geraldine, which is in the South Island of New Zealand, which is sort of south of Christchurch. It's a lovely, perfectly formed small town where you can get a great pie, which is what you must get, you know, on a road trip in New Zealand. They've got great pies.
Okay.
Geraldine.
Yeah.
Geraldine. Excellent. You just wait. I'll go there and they'll be fresh out of pies.
And I think we've all mentioned as well Abel Tasman National Park, which is, again, not one of the best known places, up near Nelson on the top of the South Island. Absolutely stunningly beautiful, isn't it? And barely anyone there.
Yeah, well, I think it's one of those places that you can either kayak or walk, and I've done both. I kayaked it when I was 16 and walked it on a school trip as well. We've been back numerous times. We're lucky enough to have family with a house, one of the only houses in the park. There's one beach where there were, like, I don't know, half a dozen houses that were built around the turn of the century, literally built by hand. You know, my sister-in-law's, you know, grandfather built it by hand and, you know, brought in all the logs, and those cabins are allowed to stay. There's no other houses in the park at all. But the thing about it is it's on the coast, so you're on these golden sand beaches the whole way, you know,
whether you're
stopping to kayak and set up camp, or whether you're walking through, or whether you're lucky enough to stay in one of the houses. You know, you've just got beach after beach of just, you know, kind of, you know, perfection, really.
And it is a place where you can, say, if you're kayaking, you can just find a beach and pull up, and there's no one there. No one. And I mean, you know, these beaches fringed with forest. I mean, stunning.
Yeah.
Stunning. And to me, I don't know, to me that sort of appeals. I'm a beach person. I love beaches. So to me that appeals a little bit more than some of the other great walks where you're, you know, in the bush for 4 days. You know, I like the mix of the Abel Tasman. You're in the bush, but then you can come out onto the beach and have a swim. Mm. It's just absolutely gorgeous.
Is there any crucial Kiwi lingo that people need to know before they go over there? Do you need to know what a batch is?
Yes, you need to know what a batch is, but if you're in the South Island, you need to know that it's called a crib.
There you go.
And that's, you know, not in a kind of homey kind of way.
These are both little holiday homes, aren't they?
That's right. Yeah. So the batch, I wrote a story a few years ago for Travel and Leisure magazine about the batch and the sort of origins of the batch, and they were kind of like, they were basically kind of really very simple structures. You know, now people refer to a batch as any sort of holiday home. So you might come across these kind of, you know, kind of glass mansions on the beach in the Coromandel, and everyone says, oh, that's the batch. But, you know, it's like a $4 million batch.
Right.
You know, the original idea of the batch was kind of literally kind of a flat-roofed wooden structure.
Right.
And it was sort of, you know, this very sort of democratic idea that everybody should have access to somewhere to go, a weekender, that either, you know, in the bush or by the beach, that you should have access to that. And a lot of New Zealanders do, you know, that's really
where did the name come from? Is it a shortening of bachelor? Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So bachelor sort of pad, but not in the way that sort of suggests.
Yeah.
You know?
In a very New Zealand kind of way.
Yeah, in a very New Zealand in the bush kind of way. And what I love about it, you know, the one that I was just talking about in the Abel Tasman, the family batch that I have access to, you know, like it's a very much a can-do sort of culture. You know, it's that, you know, everybody gets there and it's, of course, it's not on the sort of on main power. And, you know, there's always something wrong. The fridge is always broken down and the men always spend about 2 days fixing the beer fridge, or, you know, and then the only telephone there is a party line. So there's like a telephone at the end of the beach, and literally you'll be walking past and it starts ringing until you just walk up and you go, hello. And
they go, oh, stop.
Yeah. And they say, we're ringing for the Smiths. They're the third house from the end. And you just go, you drop the phone, go, oh, just hang on a minute or maybe 10 minutes. And so you just leave them there. You walk down to the Smith's house, knock on the door and say, there's a call for you. And then they come down and answer the phone. So I just love all of that.
That is
about,
amazing.
I love all that about the New Zealand batch. You know, it's got that's the real batch, is sort of, you know, the whole idea that it's a can-do culture. And in that place, they don't even have a toaster. I can't understand. I don't understand why. I think it's actually something to do with not being on the mains power, but they have one of those sort of metal grill things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where you make your toast, you know, like that.
I love that you've just told this whole story about the party line phone, but the thing that you find really weird is that they don't have a toaster.
Well, I just couldn't get that one. I mean, the party line I kind of get because, you know, I don't know, they can't just bring in a telephone pole for these eight houses, I suppose. You know, there's probably some sort of...
Probably part of the charm as well. No one really wants...
that is part of the charm. But the toaster, I was like, why didn't ever toast? I mean, surely we can bring a toaster. We came in by boat. I brought a whole wheelie suitcase from Sydney Airport. Like, you know, like really practical when you got to the beach and you had to carry it in on your head from about waist height. I was like, this suitcase seemed so practical a few hours ago, but not anymore.
Guys, sadly, we're going to have to wrap up. There's so much more we could talk about, but we're going to have to leave it there. But let's finish off with your one final piece of wisdom for people who are going to New Zealand. What would you tell them to do when they're there, or what's necessary to know before you get there? I'm going to say hire a car and do a road trip, because I think New Zealand is such a brilliant place for driving. It's, you know, the roads are really well maintained, and the scenery is amazing. And it's just a great way to see all the bits that connect all the other bits together. And you'll find these amazing vistas and locations that just pop up as you're driving around.
Mine would be to, you know, learn a few words of Maori, because you know, you'd be surprised how much a part of everyday language Maori is.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, we talk regularly about things like, you know, your whānau being your family. There's a lot of words that are sort of in day-to-day culture that would be good to know. And if you really want to be part of what a New Zealand experience is, which is very much a place where Maori culture is a fundamental part of the culture, I think learning a few words would be a good idea.
I think that's really good, because we didn't talk about it, but that's to me one of the things that also defines New Zealand is the way that culture is in there. But I was going to say drink some wine, but you're all going to do that anyway. So I'm going to say take a walk. Like, even if you're not an active person, and the beautiful thing is in New Zealand, there's always somewhere you can go that's not far away, and you can take a walk, and a bit like taking a drive, you'll end up somewhere spectacular, amazing fresh air, little vista you never thought you'd discover. And you'll feel good about yourself. You'll feel like a number eight New Zealander.
Excellent advice. Well, Lauren and Uta, thank you very much for joining me today. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks for joining us on Flight of Fancy. This is the last episode in this series, but we'll be back very soon with all new episodes. If you'd like to subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on iTunes or your favourite podcasting app, and go to traveller.com.au to read plenty of great stories.